were to make a guess, just take a stab, what might dictionaries look like or sound like in 10 years?
I think dictionaries are going to turn into clocks. The other day in the office, I realized I was the only person in the office who was wearing a watch. Because everybody else had time on every device that they had. They could get the time on their laptop, they could get the time on their cell phone. So clocks moved from being a standalone device to being something that was just, that data was everywhere. I think that dictionaries are going to be embedded information in everything that uses words. When you want to know something, you want to know it right then, right now, when and where you need it. So many people don't bother to go use a print dictionary anymore because the idea of walking across a room and picking up a book to find something out is just so antithetical to the way they live the rest of their lives.
Is this necessarily a completely good thing? Because I got to tell you, you're talking to a guy here who has an OED, the two-volume kind where you have to use the magnifying glass, and I love it. I can't imagine not having a dictionary.
Well, I'm glad. I'm glad that you feel that way, because I think that there's certainly a feeling from using the information in I guess, what, a different modality? I mean, you're talking to the only person in her office who wears a watch, right?
Mm-hmm.
I like the watch. I like the ticking sound. So there are some things that right now most online dictionaries don't give you that a print dictionary does. Serendipity, for one. And we have not yet managed to, with online dictionaries, recreate that really nice smell of a well-printed old book.
Now, serendipity, you're talking about when I'm flipping through and I'm looking for something, I find all these other groovy new words. I'm like, look at that. Arenaceous. It means hedgehog-like.
Exactly. And we're working on recreating that serendipity effect because there needs to be two things for serendipity to really work. And one is the accidental nature of it, right? It has to be something that you come across when you're not trying to find it. And the other thing is the connection. So if you encounter an empty potato chip bag lying on the street, well, you didn't expect to find that and it's random, but it's not serendipitous because there's no connection between you and the potato chip bag. If you found a page torn out of an old yearbook from the high school that you went to, that's serendipity because there's a connection to you. And both those things are technically garbage, but one means something to you and one doesn't.
So the way we use a dictionary is clearly going to change. Is the content of the dictionary going to change a lot as well? What's going to get in?
Everything. Every single word or phrase or idiom or combination. The only reason that some things are in a dictionary right now and some things aren't is that the print book is just too small to hold every word of English. Even the Oxford English Dictionary has fewer than 1 million words in it. And it's pretty easy, without even doing a whole lot of heavy lifting, to find more than, say, 4 million unique English words.
But if everything gets in, I mean, you got to draw the line somewhere. If I just say squizzlebop, is that going to be a word?
If you use it as a word, it's a word. It's all about intent and communicative value.
This is anarchy.
No, it's not, because just because a word is a word doesn't mean it's a good word. And so part of the job of the dictionary is to let you know most people think this word is terrible, so maybe you don't want to use it.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people feel that if a word's in the dictionary, it's perfectly okay to use, and if it's not in the dictionary, it's perfectly not okay to use it. And this is not a very good system for making word decisions, because the dictionary is on a time lag, especially print dictionaries. And because there may be words that are perfectly, let's say, cromulent in certain contexts that are not okay in other contexts.
Cromulent? Excuse me, I have to go to a dictionary.
Now, that's a word you may not find in a dictionary because it's from an episode of The Simpsons. And cromulent means okay, and it was actually used when one of the teachers in Bart's school was saying to another teacher, you know, I can't believe you don't know that word. It's a perfectly cromulent word. So the joke is, you know, there's this word that describes words that are okay that's not actually a word.
Uh-huh.
But once it was used in The Simpsons, it became a word automatically.
Uh-huh. But going back to your notion that everything's going to be allowed in, that this is going to be I don't know, open source kind of dictionary land. How do we determine when a word from a foreign language becomes acceptable as an English word?
It's almost like the process of naturalization. And I think we have to make a distinction between dictionaries as the record of the language, the list or the tally or the map of what is in English and how it works, and the usage guide, style guide, grammar guide role of the dictionary, which I think will be separated from the regular dictionary. So you'll have a dictionary that's a lot like a technical manual that says, here are all the words and here is how they all work together. And it's kind of like describing all the different pieces of Lego. And then there'll be the style guide, which says most educated speakers and writers of English prefer to use this Lego brick and not that Lego brick. And if you would like to be perceived as an educated speaker and writer of English, you'll do the same.
So it's going to be a sort of a tiered or graded level of words, not just the simple it's in or it's out that we have now.
Right. I say this a lot because I like to talk about puppies, but you can be a perfectly good family pet kind of dog without being in the kennel club.
Mm-hmm.
And
right.
Once you're a pedigree dog, you're judged on all sorts of other criteria that Rover is not judged on. But they're both dogs.
I've always favored mutts myself. I find they have a better disposition.
Right. And mutts are perfectly wonderful and acceptable to the vast majority of people. And the vast majority of words kind of behave the same way. You don't really care whether it's the accepted style of the New Yorker as long as you can communicate well.
I've heard you say that you want your son to one day look at a dictionary, what we think of as a dictionary, and wonder, what is that thing?
Oh, totally. But I think that the book shape is the wrong shape for the dictionary. So I don't know if you cook very much. And if you're from the South, you may have actually cooked with Crisco. But
uh-huh,
at some
sure.
point in the recent past, you started being able to get Crisco in sticks. I think that Crisco in a stick is one of the triumphs of modern civilization because it's so much easier to cook with. And so the tub is the wrong shape for Crisco because you get it all over your hands. It's really hard to measure.
That's true.
In the same way, the book is the wrong shape for the dictionary because it's too small. It can't hold all the words. It can't even hold all the right kinds of information about the words that it does hold. It doesn't tell you anything about people's opinions about a word. It doesn't tell you people think this word is beautiful. It doesn't tell you, oh, this adjective is only used with these objects. It doesn't tell you how words work. It only tells you what words mean. And what words mean is just one facet of how words work.
Hmm.
It would be like if you were trying to describe a friend of yours and somebody said, oh, hey, you know, what's John like? And you said, well, he's 6'2", he weighs 185 pounds, and he wears a size 11 shoe.
Mm-hmm.
You have described John, but you haven't told your friend anything meaningful about John. Unless, you know, they're looking for some kind of scientific experiment fodder where height is really important.
Summing all these trends and ideas up, how will we likely communicate in 2020?
I think that we'll communicate much as we do now, but I think we're going to have a little more support for our communication. So we'll have better tools to help us know whether or not we've gotten our point across. One of the big complaints people have about email is that you're never quite sure how the person on the other end is going to take what you've written. But if we had more information about language, we could give you some kind of confidence metric that what you thought was funny was actually funny. And with more information about language, we would feel more confident using more interesting words or more unusual words because we'd know that other people would have a place to go find out about them. And I think we're just going to have way more information about language in general. I mean, I saw a statistic this week that they publish 3,500 books a week. And knowing how creative people can be with language, there's a good chance that each of those books uses a word in a way in which it's never been used before. So if we're thinking 3,500 new words and meanings a week, that's an awful lot of information to stay on top of.
Will emoticons ever make it into the dictionary? Please say no.
I'm going to have to disappoint you.
Oh.
I think that there are some emoticons that are actually in dictionaries already.
Oh.
Well, okay, but think about this. The exclamation point, if you really think about it, is a kind of emoticon. It's an image that tells you what kind of expression goes with a sentence.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, think of the difference between saying it's on fire, period, and it's on fire, exclamation point.
So you're open to emoticons. Is there any place, this is what I guess what I'm trying to get at, is there any place at which I can make you draw the line and say, no, sorry, that's just not acceptable, that's not a word?
People have tried. But the truth is that I'm not the person who decides what's a word and what's not a word. If you use something as a word, there's a little magic and alchemy that happens that makes that a word.
But you're writing dictionaries. Isn't that your job?
My job is to map the language. So I tell you where everything is and what it is, but I don't leave the red light district off the map because I disapprove of it.
Uh-huh.
That would make a pretty bad map. And then you'd stumble into the red light district and not know where the heck you were. And that wouldn't help anybody.
Yeah, I hate it when that happens. Who's responsible for most of this? I mean, it's mostly youngins, isn't it? I mean, don't young people create pidgin languages when two languages clash? And don't young people give us most slang?
I think the next thing you're going to say is, kids today, get off of my lawn. I think that with so many other things, adolescents simply have more time.
Hmm.
And they're still creating themselves. So any way that they can distinguish themselves is a good use of their time. You know, that's why these kids today, they wear their crazy clothes and they talk about their crazy vampires and so forth.
Are we headed towards something better than a word?
In my opinion, there is nothing better than words. Even if they invented some magical telepathy device or something that let us convey emotion through perfume or music or anything else, nothing is better than words. And that is possibly my not inconsiderable bias talking.
Erin McKean, lexicographer and now CEO of a new online dictionary called Wordnik. Thanks very much.
You're very welcome.